And we're back. It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. So glad that you're listening. We do this every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, and every Tuesday we have a blast. And so what we're going to do this week is we're going to, I want to look at this as kind of a crash course in pro-life discussion. And so I'm going to talk about why I am pro-life, both biblically and secularly, you know, both of those conversations. And then just how do we have those conversations? Why is being consistent important in that? But before I do that, what I want to do first is wish every dad out there a happy Father's Day. That was on Sunday, a chance to celebrate dads and a chance for dads to not let their past define them. And so if you're a dad out there today that is, you know, if you're loving your kid and taking care of your kids, we salute you and we appreciate you. And if you're out there and you're like me and you've struggled and you've had failures in fatherhood, that's going to happen. But what we do today and tomorrow will define the type of dad that we are. So make that right today. If you want to hear more about that, my blog tomorrow will discuss that, and it's called My Favorite. And it talks about a conversation that I have with my daughter every single day. My daughter's name is Summer. She's the middle child. And every day I look at her and I say, "You're my favorite, Summer." And she looks at me and says, without me prodding, the first time I told that to her, she looked at me and said, "You're my favorite, Daddy." And so the reason why I do that, there's a number of reasons, but it's because I want to be intentional in her life and in my kid's life. So then I look at Gavin and say, "You're my favorite, Gavin." And I look at Evelyn, my youngest, and say, "You're my favorite, Evelyn." And so we do that because we need to be intentional, and we need to be making the effort to be the dads that we've been called to be. So you can read more about that at investinghope.com/blog. That will be up tomorrow. But what I want to do again today is talk about our pro-life stance. So look at this as a class on pro-life dialogue. So why are we pro-life? Why do we stand for every life? Why do we open the doors at Hope Resource Center every single day? Why right now are we having parenting classes at Hope Resource Center right now as I speak? These questions deserve our answers and our thoughts. Have you given that any thought? We discuss in past shows this type of outlook on the pro-life narrative. But what I want to do today is provide clarity for you as you think through some of these questions and other questions similar to these. So let's start with why pro-life. So I'll just give you my answer on that. So, and then I would challenge you to think through that. So why are you pro-life? Why is it, why would you ever tell someone that you're pro-life? Do you have any evidence, anything to back that up besides just simply saying that you're pro-life? So my stance starts with a biblical foundation. I have a biblical worldview on everything. That's how I see the world, through those lenses. I believe that God is the author of life. I believe we are made in His image. I believe life is truly a gift from the author, a blessing to have this opportunity to even have a breath. There's a song out there that says, the very breath in my lungs is a gift. May everything about us praise God. May everything about us praise the author. God chose me, Andrew Wood, to be the dad to Gavin, Summer, and Evelyn. I mean, that... out of everyone in the world, every man that's ever walked the face of this earth, God said, Andrew is going to be the dad to Gavin, Summer, and Evelyn. That is huge. That's insane that is the process that was put in place. So there is certainly biblical reason for me being pro-life, but there's also just logical and rational thought that makes me pro-life. We know that life begins at conception. And you can listen to past shows where I cited different articles and different doctors and folks from Yale and all different kind of schools that say life begins at conception. We know that pregnancies create babies. We know how to create babies. We have patients come in sometimes and they say, "I don't know how this happened." We're like, "Well, yeah, you do. You know how this happens." So we know that pregnancies create babies. Everyone knows this. We have known this since the very first ultrasound. Ultrasound hasn't been around forever, but it started in the 1950s. and wasn't really common in our country, wasn't really common in America until the 1970s, the 70s. So everyone alive today, now hear this, everyone alive today knows what is in the womb. Everyone knows that. There's no argument there. There's no possible way you can say that isn't a baby. There's no possible way that you can say, well, I don't know what that's going to be in 9 months. There's no way to make that argument because science and ultrasounds and images that we know without a doubt that a healthy pregnancy produces a baby. We all come from there. I mean, think about that. The reason that you're walking around right now, the reason that people that are pro-choice are walking around right now is because they were given life via conception. And now they had the opportunity to live. They have the opportunity to breathe. They have the opportunity to work and to do everything that it is they're doing. So why are we even having an argument about life? It is, for me, not only biblical, but just logical and rational to go, that's life. I mean, think about even down to the other day we were driving down the road and a baby raccoon was ran over. And I look out my window as I'm going around and I see what I assume is its mom running out into the road and dragging it out of the road as if to say, I got to get you out of here and save you. So there's a sense of, and there's some people out there that would say that baby raccoon's life has more value than a human in a womb. But I'm not going to get into that argument right now. But I say that to say that there's something inside of all of us that goes, aw, that mom is trying to save her baby. There's something inside of all of us that says life is precious. Life is valuable. Why was so many people in an uproar when the gorilla was shot? Because there's something inside of all of us that just says life in general is precious. And so what we have to do is we have to get to a point where we're going, this isn't about whether it's life or not, because the science is there. It is life. It is a baby. So the question is, where do we go from here? And my answer to that is, it is either life or it isn't. There isn't some kind of middle ground. When my wife found out she was pregnant with all of our children, at a very early stage, at no point did we go, well, I mean, it's not a baby yet. Let's wait for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. Then it's a baby. Or some would say, well, it's not technically a life until you take it out of the hospital and take it home. That's insane. That's crazy talk. So it is a baby. It is a life. There is no middle ground. And that's something that we have to come to grips with as we think through our stance on pro-life issues. And here in a second, I'm going to talk about consistency in our language, consistency from the pro-choice side, but also consistency from us on the pro-life side, because words do matter. And so as we look through all of these issues about pro-life and why we're pro-life, what I want you to do is understand it's more than a license plate. It's more than a simple vote. This is the issue, and I've said this many times, this is the issue that will define my generation. Because at some point, a generation has to recognize that a generation has been aborted. Because if we don't, then what are we doing? What are we doing? My son is 5 years old, and we pray at supper time. Not every time, but some nights he'll say, God, thank you for babies, and I want you to save the babies. Because he knows what I do. He knows what we do at Hope Resource Center. But he has a understanding and a value for life, even at 5 years old. We have friends that recently had a baby last Friday, and my son was feeling a little under the weather, so I stayed at home with him and our youngest, and my wife took our middle child, Summer, to the hospital to go see the baby. And what did my son say to my wife? Can you take pictures? Why? Because he understands babies have value. He wanted to celebrate with that family. So at some point, we reach a level of some would call it maturity or whatever. We reach an age where we say, no, we have a right to say that is not a life inside the womb. Well, folks, that sets a very dangerous precedent. A very dangerous precedent when we think about the liberties and the freedom that we have in this country. But we refuse to give those liberties and freedom to a life inside the womb. A life with its own DNA. A life with its own blood type. A life with its own fingers and toes. A life with its own brain. A life with its own dreams. A life with its own eyes and internal organs and tears. But we're deciding that that life isn't afforded the same freedoms and liberty that every other life is given. It's something that we really need to think about. So as we are diving internally with ourselves about our pro-life stance, we must be able to answer these questions to ourselves. Do we believe that life begins at conception? Do we believe that life has value at every stage or not? And I'm not going to rehash what I've talked about the last few weeks. But again, it sets a very dangerous precedent if we are saying that life is not valuable at different stages. Because if you devalue it at any stage, then you have devalued it. You've devalued it at every stage. And so as citizens of this country, we need to look and see what kind of choices are we making? What kind of decisions are we making? What kind of legislation are we lobbying for? Do we support life? Or do we support death? Or do we believe there's some type of middle ground? Folks, this isn't that difficult. Now, back in the day, in the 1950s, before ultrasound, maybe one could see that, well, I mean, we know that a baby comes from pregnancy, but we don't really know how they develop. But right now, what we have, it's pretty clear. It's pretty clear that the development stage, it's pretty clear that there's a baby inside of a womb. There's no question. I mean, now there's 3D images where you can almost know exactly what your baby's going to look like when they're born. So to argue it's not life, really, I think that argument is over. Now what we're saying is, does that life have value or not? So the question isn't, is it life? The question now is it a life that matters? And so that's what we need to understand and grasp. And what we're going to do the rest of the show, what we're going to do in the next segment, is we're going to discuss the different developmental stages. We're going to look at what that is. So what does a baby look like the first month, the second month, the third month, the fourth month, the fifth month? Why does it matter? Why do we get so passionate about the life issue? We're going to talk about it when we come back. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood with Hope Resource Center. You know, while I'm off during the commercial breaks, I'm reading Twitter and Facebook, and there was a huge meeting with evangelicals, quote unquote, and the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. And man, there's so much I would like to say about that, but I'm not going to here. One day you will hear my opinions on that, but not right now. What we're going to do now is we're going to continue a discussion on the pro-life issues of today. So what I wanted today's show to be is kind of like a crash course or an apologetics on why we are pro-life. So many will call me a science denier for my views on climate change. Okay, so I'm very much in tune and involved in politics, and I lean conservative. There's no question. I don't just lean; I am. And so I have different opinions about a lot of different things. And so people like to call my side's science deniers because of our view of climate change. Yet they refuse to recognize science in terms of life and ultrasounds and all that science has for us with babies in the womb. I talked with a nurse the other day, and she told me that a baby was born prematurely at 23 weeks. And they expected this baby to die because that is really, really early. Most people would say absolutely no way that the baby could live. There's no chances viability isn't where it needs to be. Well, guess what? This baby lived. So what we know is it can happen. And so often the pro-choice side will say things like, well, if it can save one life, then isn't it worth it? Well, what we know is one baby survived at 23 weeks. So if we know that one baby survived at 23 weeks, then if it'll save one life, can we not say that no abortions after 23 weeks? Well, they wouldn't agree to that. So what we have to do as pro-life people is have these conversations, have these discussions, not in a hateful and bitter way, but in a logical and rational and truth-honoring way. Because we know when life begins, and we know what is inside of a womb, and we know what pregnancy gives us, and it gives us a life. So listen to the following. Let's go through the developmental stages of a baby. So month one, you have fertilization. You have physical attributes are determined. Gender, hair, color, and eye color. Hair color and eye color are determined. Now, via ultrasound, you're not going to be able to see gender, but it's already determined in the first month. By the end, a baby is approximately 2 millimeters long and beginning early stages of development. And then we go to month two. You have the heart, the arms, the leg, the liver, and other organs begin to form. The heart starts beating. You see ear, or you have ears and mouth, and bones begin to form. Baby's toes and fingers start to form. Brain and cranial nerves begin to form. And now the baby is a half inch long. That's month two. Month three, you have arms and legs moving via ultrasound. You can see it. Heartbeat, you can hear it by the Doppler. Heart and all major organs are completely formed in month three. Muscles start to develop. Now the baby is 3 to 4 inches long. Month four, you have hair and teeth. Moms start to feel movement. If you experience that as a mom, or if you're a dad and you've experienced your wife say, "I just felt something," you know what that's like. Digestive system is forming. Gender now may be visible via ultrasound, and the baby is 5 to 6 inches long. Month five, you have eyelashes and eyebrows, fingerprints and footprints. Now baby can suck and swallow. You can actually see them sometimes sucking their thumb. Ears are developing, 7 to 8 inches long at month five. Month six, immune system, hand grip reflex. Lungs are developing, 9 to 10 inches long at month six. Month seven, eyes are open. The baby can cry. It now hiccups. Bones are fully developed at month seven. Month eight, the baby continues to grow. And then month nine, of course, you have the baby. And so we walk through that and think about the different stages of development and how quickly this baby grows. But what I want you to focus on is in month one, physical attributes are already determined. Gender, hair color, and eye color already determined in month one. So it's no longer getting rid of a fetus. If you have an abortion in that month, in that first month, or any time thereafter, it is a little boy or a little girl. But see, we don't want to have those conversations. So to argue that a fetus is not a life is denying science, truth, and logic. Again, there is no middle ground here. At conception, we know life has begun. Now, this hurts the narrative because no one wants to admit a life is being taken. Now, some do. Some have no problem with admitting that. But abortion images and discussion must stay clear of humanizing the fetus. So they don't want you to humanize the fetus. So some would say that the little app that you get on your phone that kind of walks you through the developmental stages and says, well, at this point, your baby's the size of a grapefruit, or the baby's the size of this or that. Those apps would humanize the fetus. And so what I want you to know is it is now clear. There's no arguing at this point that it's not life. And that's why I wanted to spend the first two segments on kind of setting that stage. Because it would really be dishonest to argue otherwise. You can be pro-choice. You can be okay with abortion. But you do have to at least recognize and admit that that is a life that's being affected. It's not simply a blob of tissue. It's not a blob of cells. It's not simply a fetus. It is a baby, a little boy or a little girl. Now that we have that figured out, now we can have the discussion about abortion or not. And these are hard conversations. Because as we see at Hope Resource Center, these moms coming in are dealing with a lot of things. They may be having drug abuse. They may have physical abuse, sexual abuse in their past. Their boyfriend or spouse may be forcing them to have an abortion. They may not have any support system. Mom and dad don't care about them anymore. They disown them. Or mom and dad are forcing them to have an abortion. So what we need to do is understand these are not easy decisions. But again, it's dishonest and not right to form the argument as if we're not dealing with a real life. I mean, does that make sense to us? It must. Everyone, there's something inside of everyone when you see a baby that you go, oh. You celebrate someone that's pregnant. You celebrate the fact that life is being granted and life is being given. So you see, my pro-life stance isn't just because I'm some Jesus freak Bible thumper. It isn't that at all. Now, do I believe in a creator? No doubt. And do I celebrate that creator? No doubt. And do I see the world with biblical lenses? No doubt. But logic and rational thought also tells me, as I walk down the street, or as I walk into a store, or as I look on the TV, or I look around me, I see people everywhere. These people didn't just show up. Every person you come in contact with at some point was wearing diapers as a baby. At some point was inside of a womb. Does that not change your mindset on life? Every person, you know, I usually hold up George Washington as one of the greatest men to ever walk the face of this earth. At some point, he was inside of a womb. Someone was wiping his hind end when he was a baby. So as you look around at the people that you come in contact with, every one of them was inside of a womb. Every one of them, someone chose life or not. We have kids in foster care. We have kids that have been adopted. Every one of them spent time in a womb. So you see, the question isn't, is it life or not? That question's been answered. And it's dishonest and it's not using logic to argue otherwise. So now that we have that settled, now that we have that figured out, when we come back, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss consistency. And why it's important that we're consistent in our wording on the pro-life side, and why it's important to hold those on the other side consistent and accountable for their inconsistencies in their language. And it should be fun. We'll be back in a sec. Your baby blues, so full of one. And we're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you for listening today. If you haven't been able to catch the whole show, tomorrow it'll be up on podcast. You can find that at investinghope.com/blog/podcast. And we'll share it on our Facebook page and other places as well. So hope you will do that. What we're doing today is we're talking about the pro-life stance. So we spent the first two segments, the first half hour, saying, okay, there's no arguing now. Life, it is life. There's no middle ground. It either is life or it isn't life. And the reason I bring that up is because we must be consistent. So we have to be consistent in our discussion. And so there is no middle ground. One must deny science and logic to argue otherwise. And so, you know, the current president has once said that words are important. Now, the current president is pro-choice. Well, I would agree. Words are very important. And consistency is important. So what I would say is, if you are pro-choice, and the vast majority that are would be for abortion at any stage for any reason. You know, the tagline "safe, legal, and rare" has long gone. They're for abortion for any reason. So if that is the case, then I would call for you to be consistent and quit humanizing the fetus. So at any point during the pregnancy, do not call it a baby. So that means no baby shower, no baby announcement, no gender reveal. All of these things humanize the fetus, right? So why go to the doctor? Why have prenatal care? Why take vitamins if it is not a life? I mean, think about that. There are folks that say abortion is okay for any reason at any point, and that it's not a life, that it's a blob of cells. But would they not encourage their friend to go to the doctor? Would they not encourage their friend to have prenatal care? Would they not encourage their friend to take vitamins for that baby? Well, of course they would. But that's inconsistent, because if you're going to the doctor, if you're having prenatal care, if you're taking vitamins, then what you're doing is validating and saying, okay, this is a life inside of me. Why prepare a nursery? Why have a baby shower? Why do any of that? All of that humanizes the fetus. This is why consistency matters. It is either life or it isn't. Do you understand the failure and hypocrisy here? Again, the debate is far from safe, legal, and rare. It is now for any reason at any time. Let me tell you another one. There are some people typically saying that they are, you know, these same people typically say that they are for minorities. They claim at every opportunity they get that, you know, us that are conservatives are hateful and are bigoted and are all these names. Yet they fight for abortion for any reason. For any reason. Now, in their argument, their any reason is, well, my family's too big. I mean, the Planned Parenthood CEO herself had an abortion, and the reason that she said was because her family was big enough. Now, she had money, so it wasn't a money issue. Her health was fine. She just simply said her family was big enough. Now, they said that, but they didn't want to go through the proper things to get her husband fixed or to get her fixed or anything like that. They just wanted to take care of it with abortion. But see, that they claim that they're for minorities. Now, I would point out that most abortion clinics are put in poverty-stricken areas and in minority-populated areas. And I would also point out that Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, had a real distaste and disdain for minorities. And her goal was to see them eradicated. That was ultimately her goal. But besides all that, they say now that they are for minorities and they want to do everything they can to help minorities. And then they say that they're for abortion for any reason. Well, even if that reason is race, because you do know that some people come in And they've slept with multiple men months ahead of time. And they may say something like this: if this baby is from this white guy, I'm going to have an abortion, but it's from the black guy, I'm going to keep it, or vice versa. So what we now have is we have people having abortions based solely on the race of the man involved. But that's never discussed. That's a conversation that's never had because, again, it hurts their narrative. So we must be having those conversations. I stand in direct opposition to anyone having abortion specifically for race. But it's happening, folks. We should be able to discuss these things logically, without anger or bitterness, but with clarity and with passion. As you can tell, I'm passionate about this issue. But not just for political points. I'm passionate about this issue because lives are involved. Black lives and white lives and Asian lives and Hispanic lives and Chinese lives. And the list goes on and on. We must hold people accountable to their words. So I'm oftentimes dumbfounded when we hear people that are so staunchly pro-choice celebrate that they're going to have a grandbaby. Well, isn't that humanizing the fetus? Why would we do that? Are the same people that attack the NRA for making profits, and they say, are our children not worth more than that, would donate money to abortion clinics? Are our children not worth more than that? So consistency matters when we're having these discussions. So we've already said that it is definitely life. So now we're at a point where we're saying, is the life valuable or not? And many will say it isn't. I mean, as the statistics show, we have about 1 million abortions every single year in America. So many are comfortable with saying, well, you know, it doesn't have that much value. But consistency doesn't just get pointed at those that are pro-choice. We pro-lifers must be consistent in our tone and our language as well. So we must refrain from saying things like what people said to me when we were pregnant with our third child. You know how that happens, right? When are y'all going to stop? Well, does that sound very pro-life? Or when we're attacking people with multiple kids. And that happens in the church every single day. Well, that's not consistent in our pro-life message. Or saying things like, I hope your baby is normal. First off, what is normal? Second, what if my baby's not normal? Does that mean it has lesser value? What if my baby's disabled? What if my baby has Down syndrome? What if my baby has other ailments? Does that mean we should get rid of it? Does that mean, what's that mean? So praying for someone when they're pregnant is welcomed and encouraged, but saying things like, I hope it's normal, we need to refrain from saying that. Or saying things like, they have too many kids. Is that consistent with our pro-life message? No. Saying things like, when are you going to stop? Notice that all of these things have negative leanings on life. All of them do. And so your message isn't consistent as a pro-lifer if you're making those comments. And some people will say, well, that's petty. You know that we mean well. Well, I don't know. No, I don't know that. Because the other side could say the same thing. So being consistent in our verbiage and in our wording is very, very important. People need to look at us pro-lifers and say, I don't agree with them, but man, they're consistent. That's like, I don't agree with the feminist that says, yeah, I know it's a life, but oh well, I'm still for abortion. I don't agree with them, but at least they're consistent. At least they're bold enough and consistent enough to say, yeah, I know that. I know the consequences. At least they're not being dishonest and saying untruths about life inside the womb. And so it goes both ways. Consistency is very important as we're standing for life. Because consistency gives us credibility. Which is why I believe a lot of folks' argument fails. Because there is no credibility. Because there isn't consistency. There isn't consistency and credibility when the largest abortion clinic in the country says safe, legal, and rare, and then the CEO of that abortion clinic says we had an abortion because our family was big enough. Well, that doesn't really match with safe, legal, and rare. That doesn't sound very rare to me. That sounds convenient to me. So consistency matters. And so when you're in your church and you're having those conversations and you see someone that's having babies, celebrate them. Pray for them. Love on them. Because life is precious and is a gift and is valuable. And I've been guilty of it myself, and I'm trying to get better in my consistent language because it matters. It really does. And so these conversations are worth having, and they need to be had, and we need to hold each other accountable, not just on our pro-life side, but hold those on the pro-choice side accountable to their language as we all try to stand for life. We'll be back. We're back. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Today we have done like a crash course in pro-life terminology. We walked through that when life begins. We've looked at the developmental stages through each month. And I hope that you have learned something. I hope that you have looked at this or heard this and said, okay, you know, I need to look at how I have these discussions. I need to hold myself accountable, hold others accountable to consistent language, because it is important. And I hope that we think through our beliefs and our stances. We need to be prepared to share this with others. So I started the show by talking about Father's Day, and then I talked about the blog that's going to be posted tomorrow and it's entitled My Favorite. And then I thought, you know, I'll just read that to end the show so that we can end on a note of celebrating dads and celebrating the gift that our kids are and the gift that it is to be a parent. My favorite summer. This is a phrase I say to my daughter on a daily basis. Her response, without prodding from me, is, my favorite daddy. The first time I heard her say those words, I nearly lost it. This seems silly, but these words are valuable. These words of affection and affirmation are meant to illustrate the love this dad has for his daughter, and vice versa. It also doesn't hurt my other kids' feelings. As I often tell Gavin that he's my favorite Gavin, and Evelyn that she's my favorite Evelyn. Now, why is this important? It is important because these simple phrases and conversations are intentional acts. And being intentional and not mundane with our relationships is key to moving forward and growing deeper in our love for another. It is easy to gloss over our parental responsibilities and start simply going through the motions. We get them up and ready in the morning, get them to school or to the babysitter, pick them up, feed them, bathe them, and then get them to bed. This is a normal day in the life of a parent. Sure, these days include discipline, TV time, and conversation, but ultimately, most days are patterned in a similar fashion. I'm not arguing against a pattern or a routine. We would lose our minds without this, but I'm arguing for more intentionality. We must be present and engaged with our children. How are their days going? What moves them to laughter or hurt? What interests them and holds their attention or captivates their mind? What goals do they have in front of them or have set for themselves? These are simple questions that can go a long way in allowing a parent to dive deep in their child's life without opening up their diary. I'm not sure if kids still have those or not. We should desire to know more about our kids and be more involved in their lives. I say this as a failed and distracted dad myself. I would like to think I am engaged 24 hours a day, but oftentimes I'm not. I've heard my kids, more than I would like to admit, tell me to put my phone down or look away from the TV. They have no issue in pointing out my missteps and lack of focus. These failures, however, do not define my today or tomorrow. I recognize my lapse of focus or engagement, and I seek to remedy that with redirection of my time and energy. This isn't just a reality for me. This should be the reality of dads everywhere. In light of this past Sunday, Father's Day, I encourage dads everywhere to make time to focus on your kids. Enjoy the everyday moments that we sometimes neglect or take for granted. Be present and engaged in their life as you love, protect, and raise them. This role we are blessed to play as dad is truly a gift. It is not lost on me that God chose me out of all the men to ever walk the earth to be Gavin's, Summer's, and Evelyn's dad. That is a remarkable truth that should rescue our awe every day. Don't take this job lightly today. You have been put in this place and role for a purpose. Gain the respect from your kids because of your great love for them, and show them daily that love. I can promise you that you will never regret putting in the work for them. Hearing that phrase, "my favorite daddy," keeps me going and holds me to a higher standard, a standard I fail to achieve daily, but a standard I long to meet out of a deep, deep love for my kids. So happy Father's Day. Stand with your kids. Love your kids. And you know, I heard a song yesterday that said, "What kind of man would I be if I didn't raise a man better than me?" I mean, it's actually a kid from my hometown that wrote the song. And I thought, that is one of the greatest lines ever. Because truly, what kind of man would we be if we didn't raise men better than us? Right? Or if you have a daughter, raise a daughter better than you. Love them. Serve them. Take care of them. Protect them. Discipline them. There's nothing wrong with that. But always know that this is a gift that some people do not get the opportunity to have. Don't lose sight of that. So as you're thinking through your pro-life stance, if you're a parent, look down the hallway. Look at that gift that God has granted you with. And understand the responsibility of that. And understand that that is why ultimately we stand and value life. Because folks, life matters. Your babies matter. And so we want to make sure that we are having those conversations, that we're being consistent, and that we're standing for life every single opportunity we get. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. So don't close the book on me yet. I still got a long way to go. Empty pages to fill, and the best part is still